Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today we're going to finish the section of the NALC Constitution that relates to federal and subordinate branches. We'll pick up where we left off. We are now on Article 7. So before we get into that, the nominations for office in Branch 2502 are coming up on Wednesday, and it is exciting. It's getting real. There's rumors starting to fly about, oh, this person might run, and it looks like this person's going to run. So we may have a more crowded field than we initially anticipated. But Michael and Jonathan and I have like a month and a half, 2 month head start on anybody else who announces their nomination on Wednesday. And so hopefully that benefits us. I guess we'll see. There's something to be said for planning. And also, we have a platform out that people have been able to review and spread around. And I'm really curious to see if other candidates also put out a platform. I hope they do, because I'd like to know what they're all about. But honestly, as long as our sitting president loses, we can right the ship of the branch. The people who I've heard who may also be running, in addition to Michael, they're reasonable, they're quality people, and I think the branch is going to be okay. Of course, obviously, job one is for our ticket to win, but, you know, there's hope, and so that's something. It's obvious that we're not the only ones seeing the problems with the branch. And speaking of the branch, let's get back to the rules that are supposed to govern it. Article 7, fees, dues, fines, and assessments. Section 1. Initiation fees and dues shall be fixed in the bylaws and payable in advance, provided that members with 50 years membership shall be exempt from the payment of dues, fines, and assessment. Well, look at that. You stay in the union for 50 years, don't have to pay your dues anymore. Section 2. The rates of dues and initiation fees may be increased only by majority vote by secret ballot of the regular members in good standing at a special or regular meeting, after reasonable notice has been given that this question will be before the meeting, except that a branch may provide in its bylaws that such majority vote may be had by secret ballot referendum. The same rules of procedure shall apply to the levy of a special or general assessment and to the imposition of fines upon members found guilty of charges proffered or preferred, it says, against them, except that such assessments or fines must be approved by a two-thirds vote. Branch bylaw provisions requiring a vote greater than a majority of the regular members in good standing at a special or regular meeting to amend the branch bylaws do not apply to proposals to increase the rates of dues or initiation fees. All right, so I want to go back that the rules of procedure shall apply to the levy of a special adjustment and to the imposition of fines upon members found guilty of charges preferred against them. Okay, so if somebody is guilty of something and they have to pay a fine, it requires a two-thirds vote. Section 3. A. Any member leaving the Postal Service for any reason other than retirement or OWCP, or any member temporarily or permanently promoted to a supervisory position within the U.S. Postal Service may retain membership only in accordance with Article 2, Section 1, NALC Constitution. So I'm not going to go back and look at it, but I'm pretty sure that's the section that allows you to keep your membership just for the purposes of health benefits. B. Branches may exempt or remit the dues of any member under reasonable rules uniformly applied for a stated period of time. Branches may provide for the payment of dues in advance for any period in excess of 1 month. Section 4. Any member failing to pay any fine, assessment, or monthly dues within 30 days after the same shall become due. So if you don't pay your dues within 30 days of when they become due, shall forfeit their membership. They shall vacate any office held in the branch or association effective on the date of such forfeiture. They shall not be entitled to vote in the branch, and they shall not be eligible for nomination or election to any office, provided that the branch, for good and sufficient reasons, under reasonable rules uniformly applied, may extend the 30-day grace period for not more than an additional 60 days. All right, you don't pay your dues, you're out. But you can get grace if you ask for it, presumably. Section 5. A former member whose membership has been forfeited may be reinstated by the payment of back fines, assessments, and dues as well as such reinstatement fee as the branch may prescribe by reasonable rules uniformly applied. So this is interesting. In the case of scabs, somebody leaves the union, you know, they withdraw their membership. So I would think that that means they don't owe any dues for the period that they're not a member. And so if they say, okay, on March 3rd, I'm leaving the union, cut off my dues, then when they come back, they can just come back into the branch. Now, if they got kicked out for not paying their dues, then they would have to, you know, pay any back dues that might be owed and any fines or whatever. If you know any different about the reinstatement of scabs, let me know, because it's going to come up. If our ticket wins in our local election, there are quite a few people, a surprising number of people, who are out of the union now who are saying, dude, I'm going to get back in if you guys win, because now the problem is not there anymore. So we'll have to deal with this, hopefully. All right, Article 8, sick relief and funeral benefits. Branches may, at their option, make provision in their bylaws for the payment of sick relief or funeral benefits, enact bylaws for the government of same, and levy additional dues for such purposes. But no branch shall make it mandatory upon members or applicants for membership to pay such additional dues or take up such benefits in order to retain membership or become members of said branch. So there you go. You can have that at your branch if you want. Article 9, committees. The president of the branch shall appoint a committee of blank, the number to be fixed by the branch, on organization. Such committee shall work... Let's say it's three people. A committee of three people on organization. Such committee shall work in conjunction with and subordinate to the National Executive Council to secure such benefits as the National Association may desire. Section 2. There shall be a committee appointed by the president, consisting of three members, to whom all bills and claims against the branch shall be referred before being acted upon by the branch. And that is committees. Article 10, charges. Section 1. Any member of the branch who shall violate the constitution or bylaws of the association or branch may have charges preferred against them, and if such charges are proved, shall be fined, reprimanded, suspended, or expelled, as the laws may direct or the branch determine. All right, so this is how it works. Somebody prefers, I really feel like it should be proffered, but whatever. Somebody prefers these charges, and then if there's already a penalty laid out, then that penalty is enforced. If there's not a penalty laid out, then the branch determines what that penalty is going to be. And if my interpretation of Article, I think it was 7, is correct, then that penalty has to be enforced by a 2/3 vote. Maybe that's only if it's a fine. All right. Any officer of the branch who shall fail or neglect to discharge the duties of their office, or who may be guilty of gross misconduct, may be removed from office. These determinations shall be made by the members present and voting at the next regular branch meeting, after which said charges were read to the branch. The vote regarding any of the above matters may be continued once by motion to the following regular branch meeting. Section 2, charges. Charges must be made in writing, specifying the offense, failure, neglect, or misconduct, so as to fully apprise the member or officer of the nature thereof, and shall be signed by a member of the branch. A copy of said charges, under seal or letterhead of the branch, shall be served upon them. Said charges shall be read by the recording secretary at the first regular branch meeting after service on the member or officer. So this happened at my branch a couple meetings ago, that there were two separate charges that were brought against our president, and one of them was resolved on the spot. His ruling was essentially overruled, or the behavior that was deemed appropriate was overruled by the branch, and so the person bringing those charges just dropped them. So, okay, we'll consider this resolved. So, yeah, it's really interesting. And then we had to wait for the next meeting to get the result of the other charges, which wound up not holding up. So it's quite a process. All right, Section 3. The president, or if the president be the person against whom the charges were made, as it was in our case, the president, or if the president be the person against whom the charges are made, the vice president shall then appoint a committee of 3 disinterested members, who shall forthwith summon the parties, hear and take down or cause to be taken down or recorded the testimony and or documentary evidence presented. It shall be the duty of the committee to find the true facts and report to the branch. The parties are entitled to be heard by the committee, to present evidence, and to cross-examine all witnesses who make statements to the committee. But rules of evidence and rules of judicial procedure need not be observed. The committee, after completing its fact-finding duty, will present to the branch a written report of the facts elicited and immediately thereafter disband and be eligible to vote. The branch shall then decide, by simple majority vote, the issue of whether or not the facts, as found by the committee, sustain the charge. The charge party is entitled to defend themselves before the branch immediately before the vote is taken. If the branch decides that the facts sustain the charge, then the branch shall entertain a motion to fix the penalty, if any be required. And guys, I have to digress here, because when we had these charges against our president, there was a debate of all the crazy things over, it says in here, the branch shall then decide by simple majority vote the issue of whether or not the facts, blah, blah, blah. And so there was a motion that someone made to have the vote done by secret ballot. And because of a reasonable fear of retaliation. And the motion was made on the floor, and then members of the executive board actually stood up and seconded it and said, yeah, it's reasonable to be concerned that there's going to be retaliation. And dude, if you've heard me talk about my local president, the one who fired me from the Carrier Academy, yeah, it's definitely reasonable to be concerned that there might be retaliation. And so that's why they wanted to do this vote on his charges by secret ballot. And this objection came up that, well, it says in here that it's supposed to be done by simple majority vote, and a secret ballot, that's not simple. And so we shouldn't do it. We got to abide by these rules. And like, guys, just for your reference, a simple majority, it's just a mathematical term. It means more than 50%. So you have to get a simple majority in order to win or to have the motion pass. So if you have 100 people voting, you need 51 votes. There's also a plurality vote, which is like if you have multiple parties. I think I went over this in a previous episode, but if you have like multiple options, then just whichever one gets the most is what carries. And then there's a supermajority, which is the 2/3 majority. This just says simple majority vote, which means anything more than half of the people voting and the vote carries. Simple does not refer to how the vote is supposed to. It doesn't say anything about the method of voting. And dude, we went back and forth on this, and it was madness. Okay, section 4. Questions of expulsion or removal from office shall be decided by ballot and require a 2/3 vote. So if we had gotten to that point, then yes, it needed to be by ballot, and it has to be by 2/3. It never did get to that point because the charges didn't hold, the charges didn't carry. If less than 2/3 of the ballots are for expulsion or removal from office, the branch shall proceed to determine whether the punishment shall be suspension, fine, or reprimand. A fine and the amount thereof must be approved by a 2/3 secret ballot vote. If suspension be determined upon, the branch shall fix the term of suspension. If reprimand be determined upon, the president or vice president, if the president be the person against whom the charges were made, shall reprimand the accused in open meeting. All right, so there's your available punishments. Section 5. During the suspension for an offense, a member is not exempt from dues, and they shall always got to get that money, and they shall be subject to all the penalties of Article 7, Section 4 for the non-payment of same. So there you go. Better pay your dues even if you're suspended. Section 6. Any member or officer suspended for any offense shall be reinstated on the removal of the cause and the payment of all demands against them, or at the expiration of the term for which the member was suspended, without action of the branch, and the president or vice president, as the case may be, shall declare in open meeting their reinstatement. This provision does not apply where the member is suspended pursuant to charges brought by the National Association or by any officer or representative by authority of the President or Executive Council of the National Association. Section 7. An expelled member can be reinstated only after the manner of a new applicant. All right. So if you get removed from office, then you're going to have to go through whatever the process is to get back into office. You're not just automatically back into your position. At least that's my reading of it. Article 11, appeals. Section 1, an appeal may be taken to the president from the decision of any other officers of the branch and to the branch from any decisions of the president, which appeal must be taken at the meeting at which the subject appealed from is under consideration and before any other business is taken up for action. And any member considering that an injustice has been done them by a decision of the branch may appeal in writing to the Committee on Appeals of the National Association. Guys, knowledge is power. And I wish that I had read all this stuff before, like when I got fired from the Carrier Academy, because I had no idea that I had this right to appeal. And you know, it's kind of a fucked up thing that when management issues discipline, they have an obligation to inform the carrier of their right of appeal. Now, you may appeal this notice of removal or the suspension or whatever, you know, that you have these rights. And at least when I got like fired from the Carrier Academy, there was no such notification that I had a right to appeal this decision. It was acted like, no, in fact, it was explicitly said like, dude, I'm the president. I can do whatever I want. And to me, we have this moral obligation to let people know, like whatever we would expect of management, we should expect at least that much from ourselves, the way we treat each other. That's a big part of why I'm reading all of this, is because we owe it to each other to treat each other properly. And this process is part of it, that if you feel like you have been aggrieved by something, some decision that your branch made, like firing you from the Carrier Academy, then you can appeal it to the branch. Section 2, when an appeal from the action of the branch is taken, the following rules must be observed. First, the appeal must be in writing and filed with the recording secretary of the branch, together with any written testimony, arguments, and briefs, within 20 days from the date of branch meeting at which the decision to be appealed from was made. An appellant's request for documents and records to support their appeal shall not be unreasonably denied by the branch. So if you need emails or you need records to support your appeal, the branch should provide that to you. Second, the recording secretary shall submit and read to the branch at its next regular meeting following the receipt of the appeal the notice of intention to appeal. The appeal and all written testimony, arguments, briefs, and evidence submitted by the appellant. Third, this branch shall then be allowed 20 days to prepare its reply, or the branch shall be allowed 20 days to prepare its reply, which shall be in writing with the seal of the branch attached thereto. A copy of this reply shall be immediately transmitted by the recording secretary to the appellant. The recording secretary shall also immediately transmit the appeal, together with all testimony, arguments, briefs, and evidence submitted by the appellant and the reply of the branch thereto via registered mail to the chairperson of the Committee on Appeals of the National Association. Either party to an appeal from a decision of the branch to the Committee on Appeals of the National Association may, if dissatisfied with the decision, appeal to the National Convention of the National Association of Letter Carriers in accordance with the procedure set out in Article 11, Section 4 of the National Constitution. And at the last meeting in Boston, we heard those kind of appeals, that people were not satisfied with the decision. They brought the decision to the body as a whole to hear their case. It was interesting. Article 12, funds. Section 1, all funds of the branch shall be deposited in such bank or savings institution as the branch may determine, provided that the treasurer may retain a sum not to exceed blank dollars, the amount to be fixed by the branch, in their hands for current expenses. Section 2, no money shall be paid out by the treasurer except on a warrant ordered by the branch and signed by the president and secretary, provided that it shall be the duty of the president and secretary to issue a warrant in favor of the national secretary-treasurer in payment of the semi-annual per capita tax promptly after the 1st of July and the 1st of January, respectively. Got it laid out right in here. You got to get those dues to national. Section 3. All funds shall be devoted to such uses as the branch may determine, provided that no appropriation shall be made except when ordered by a majority vote of the members present and voting at a regular meeting. Providing further that branches may make provision in their bylaws allowing officers to spend a certain sum of money between branch meetings in cases of emergency. So guys, your branch just can't just spend money. You know, presumably like they can pay the branch's bills, pay the power bill, but if they want to buy something, if they want to do essentially anything else with that money, it has to be approved by the branch. The branch has to vote and say, yes, it's okay to spend money on X. Article 13, indemnification. The branch is authorized upon affirmative vote of the membership to pay all the expenses for investigating services, employment of counsel, and other necessary expenditures in any cause, matter, case, or cases where an officer, representative, employee, agent, or one charged with acting in behalf of the branch and or its affiliates is charged with any violation or violations of any law or is sued in any civil actions with respect to any manner arising out of their official duties, except if such officer, representative, employee, or agent is charged with a breach of their trust to the branch or any subordinate body or member thereof. This provision does not apply to suits brought against the branch or any of its officers, representatives, and agents by the National Association. All right, so the branch can pay legal expenses if there is trouble. Even a member, right? Employment of counsel for officer, representative, employee, agent, or one charged with acting on behalf. No, so it's like branch officers. If they get sued, yes, they can spend branch money to defend that suit as long as the branch approves it. Article 14, amendments. This constitution shall not be altered or amended except in the manner provided for the alteration or amendment of the Constitution of the National Association of Letter Carriers. Article 15, order of business. 1, roll call. 2, reading of minutes of previous meeting. 3, reading of communications, notices, bills, etc. 4, applications for membership. 5, balloting for candidates. 6, initiation of elected candidates. 7, reports of standing and special committees. 8, MBA. 9, health benefits plan. 10, unfinished business. 11, new business. 12, good of the association. So I don't know what good of the association is intended to be, but at my branch meetings, this is where people can just like get up and talk about what they think is relevant to the branch. 13, for improvement of the service. I don't know what that is either. Maybe that would be like a teaching session or something. I don't know. I don't think we do that at my branch, or if we do, it's just glossed over. So if you know what that is, please let me know. classesofmail@gmail.com. 14, financial secretaries report of receipts. 15, treasurer's report of expenditures. 16, adjournment. A subordinate branch may, at its discretion, by a majority vote, change its regular order of business so that unfinished business and new business shall precede the reports of standing and special committees. And thus ends the Constitution for federal and subordinate branches. All right, that is the stuff I really needed to know about the way my branch is supposed to run. And that's good stuff. And now you guys know, and you know more importantly about your rights if you are mistreated by the branch. And if you are a branch officer, you know about the way you're supposed to treat people. So let's do that, guys. It's, you know, we get enough mistreatment from management. We don't need to be piling on by mistreating each other. Okay, that's all I got for this time. I'm hoping to increase my schedule of episode releases because in addition to these educational episodes, I want to do some campaigning episodes where I talk about why I'm running for office. I know I've already had some like that, but you know, I'm not just reaching my national audience. I'm reaching the potential voters here in Las Vegas. And so there's going to be some talk about that stuff as well. And maybe you'll find it interesting if you're outside Las Vegas, like what goes into running for office and what our concerns are and stuff like that. So you can kind of join me on this journey. And hopefully at the end, we are victorious. I know that the incumbents have like a 90-something percent victory rate or re-election rate. So we're hoping to buck that trend. We shall see. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. I'll catch you next time.